Welcome to Career Tools. This week, our Sweet 16 cast, a celebration of 16 years of Manager Tools.
Well, welcome everybody. It's great to have you all. We have several people today on the podcast that you've all heard at one time or another, but never, ever at the same time on the same podcast. So Mark Horstman, of course, would the podcast be without Mark? We have Wendy Lord.
Like I'm on the radio. Hey.
Kate Horstman.
Hi.
And Sarah Sentis.
Hi, everyone.
Hi, everybody. Welcome. So, Mark, can you believe it's been 16 years we've been doing Manager Tools podcast?
No, I can't. At different days, it seems like either it was yesterday or it was 50 years ago.
Yeah, Mark got up at 5 o'clock this morning to record this podcast.
And yeah, Mark got up at 4 o'clock this morning.
Oh, 4 o'clock to be ready at 5 o'clock. So today might be one of those days that you're thinking differently.
Good one.
Coffee takes longer to brew in California.
Well, some of us have to pack because we're traveling after we're presenting for 2.5 hours.
You thought you were going to wind down after 16 years, right? Now you're just winding up.
It's not 16. Apparently, it's not 16 years yet. So there we go.
That's true. Another 2 weeks.
So that's true. After 16 years, you will be winded down.
Yes, that's right.
So we have some listeners who, and we know because they've been licensees way back to the very beginning. They've been with us forever, and they probably know the story. Well, I hope they know the story of Manager Tools. We've talked about it once or twice, not many times, but we've talked about it. But we have a lot of listeners who've joined us since then. We thought it might be interesting to go back to reminisce a little bit about the beginning of Manager Tools. And Mark, you remember that. I think the genesis of all those folks, we can talk about the beginning of Manager Tools at the beginning of the podcast. Let's talk about the beginning of Manager Tools, which was Horstman and Company. And I was at a large telecommunications firm at the time. And I joined this organization and everybody hated it. It was a big IT organization responsible for billing and counts and managing $20 million customers, feeding telemarketing and customer service. You can imagine the impact the organization had, but it was large and slow and everybody hated it. And it was one of these jobs, it was kind of one of those widowmaker jobs that nobody wanted. So I go down there, I talked to all my customers. I figure out balance scorecard was a big thing at the time. Those of you go that far back, say, okay, here are the metrics I'm going to measure. And I measured them. We did it for a year. We're going to achieve these impossible things. We achieved them. And at the end, customers still hated us. So I called up Mark. Mark had Horstman and Company, leadership management consulting firm. I said, Mark, I know Mark forever, trusted him implicitly. I got a problem. I need help with redoing my balance scorecard because I must have got it wrong. I must have the wrong metrics. So he said, okay, I'll come and help you. So he comes to the organization. He spends 2 weeks with my folks. I just set him loose. Just go figure out what we got to do. He comes back and goes, dude, you don't have a problem with your metrics. You have a problem. He said it much more politely. You have a problem with your organization. Yeah. And he said, you need the basics of management in your organization. And I can't recall, dude, whether you called it the Trinity at the time, but it was one-on-ones, feedback, coaching, delegation, and DISC. DISC had this big piece of story.
Yeah, and the other piece of it was customer.
And focus on customer, right?
Yeah, so focus internal on the customer. Focus. Yeah, the metrics you had killed were internal.
Yeah,
And we started talking about our lifelong, at least since we were professionals, lifelong love for leadership and management, thinking and doing and so on, then during that engagement, and we kept at it. And then I got tired of running my company.
Well, you know, the real piece was, I think I told, now I'm going to take some credit for this because I did say at the end, now Mark wouldn't say this, but I'll tell you guys, I had managers coming to my office crying, literally crying about the impact that Mark's work had on my organization. I had one woman come to my office, she's crying. She's like, not only did it change her relationship at work and how effective she was at work, but she said it changed her marriage. Now, folks, we're not marriage tools, so don't. We're talking about management when we're talking about
marriage.
Don't do that. Don't take our stuff and apply it to your marriage. She did, and she was crying about it. I had somebody who was on the verge of losing their career and turned into somebody that the customers just absolutely adored and loved. I have many, many stories. And I told Mark at the time, I said, dude, I don't know how you can do this, but you've got something special here. You can't do this for 40 or 50 managers at a time. You got to go change the world. You can change the world with this stuff. And Mark and I always had that belief, right? That management can change the world. And that I think was really the seed of like, how do we take what Mark does and get it to everybody?
Yeah. And then in Christmas 2004, we had tried several different ways to get things started. And then Christmas 2004, your wife gave you an iPod for Christmas. And you called me, I think, a week or so later, and you said, dude, I've figured out what we're going to do. And I said, okay, what? You said, we're going to do a podcast. And I said, I'll never forget
that. Just like in that geeky way, we're going to do a podcast. Yeah.
He had studied all about podcasts. And those of you who know podcasts know that was before podcasts were cool. I'm not sure they're cool yet either, but still, they weren't cool then. And he said, we're going to do a podcast. And I said, okay. And then about a second later, I said, what's a podcast? Because at the time, I didn't own an iPod. And as some of you have heard, the story goes from there that Mike then proceeded to create, as a classic IC, a 9-page Microsoft project plan. At the time, I was flying back and forth from my home in Texas to Washington, D.C., where Mike lived, to take care of a different client. And in order to help the start of the company, rather than staying at the Ritz in Tyson's Corner, I chose to stay in Mike's basement while we were working on, okay, what's the idea going to be for this and so on. And one time I was flying in.
Cookie crumbs in
the
couch downstairs.
And one time he called me and said, hey, did you get my project plan? And of course, you never ask a hi that. And so I said, yeah. And then a second goes by and he said, did you read it? I said, no, I'm busy. I have other things to do. And I finally looked at it. I finally looked at it a couple of days later, flying into Washington, D.C. And I called him and I said, I'll tell you, we're not doing that. We're not going to take that long. We're not going to spend that much 6 months going through all the details. I said, what we're going to do is we're going to run on a Best Buy. And we're going to buy a USB microphone. We're going to plug it into the side of your darn laptop computer. And we're going to talk into it. And we're going to find out whether or not this thing will work. Because all the planning in the world about audio and business and LLC and all that sort of stuff don't matter if it doesn't work on air. And so we did. We went to Best Buy and plugged into the laptop. And we still have that recording where we just basically talked about
management. I was going to ask about the hidden recording.
Yes. The very first recording we ever did, Mike and I. And we listened to it and it said, and I was shocked. It sounded really, really good. It sounded like two guys talking about management. And so the gift of the iPod was the thing that got us started down the vehicle of doing podcasts. Now, to Mike's credit, the high I said, we ain't doing that. And then the high C insisted. And so that was in January 2005. And so for the next 6 months, we followed his project plan, basically, to make sure we had the right audio quality. Mike produced all of our podcasts for years and years and years before we worked with Paul Figiani. And then on, I guess it was it June 28th or was it June 26th? I'm pretty sure it was June 26th of 2005, our first podcast dropped. And Mike, I can't remember, was it the day before Apple announced
support
or was it the day after?
I think it was the day after. I think we had it all ready to go, scheduled for the 26th. And then like on the 25th, Apple announced support. So we weren't up on the day of, but the day after, just because of our schedule.
So we got some mileage out of early adopter, and we're pretty certain, based on some conversations we had with people at Apple and how iTunes worked in the beginning that we were listened to by people at Apple, which helped our rankings quite significantly. And I can remember emailing you a couple of weeks after the start of the podcast. And I said, hey, I went to the log files. We have 100 listeners, 100 downloads.
Aww.
Yeah.
We were so
cute. 100
people. Oh, my God. That's adorable.
If we could double
them,
that.
And one of them was me.
That's right. Yeah.
Wendy, were you listening that early?
I can remember where I was when I had the first one. I can remember my apartment.
Yeah. So you're a listener from the very beginning. What was your experience? How did you find us? Why did you find us? And then what was it like?
There were a couple of other podcasts around, and I was already listening to podcasts because I don't think I am anymore, but I was one of those people who is on the newest thing always. I just want to know what's new. And I've always been interested in work and management and just people's experience at work and how it works and how companies work and all that stuff. So I would listen or read to that stuff then. And I was also in a job that I was really struggling with. And so I was looking for help, and it seemed like a good idea. It seemed like you were going to be able to help, I think. Yeah. And one thing I remember was how good the sound quality was. Even back then, I used to sometimes listen in my car, but because cars back then in a million years ago didn't have the connections they have now. We didn't even have mobile phones then. So, you know, it was a million years ago, or at least I didn't. And so I would listen with a Bluetooth speaker, but it wasn't Bluetooth. It was just plugged into my iPod, which wasn't an iPod. It was a knockoff. And I would listen driving in the car with one of those speakers on. And if the sound quality of most podcasts was so bad that I would get to where I was going with a headache and not with manager tools, I would talk out loud to you and stop on the side of the road to take notes, but I wouldn't have a headache.
Yeah.
I think Mark and I were talking about, and I'm a high C, I'll tend to go overboard in that stuff, but we both came to the conclusion that we didn't want to have the best audio in the world. What we wanted is the audio quality to not get in the way of the lessons, of the teaching.
Well, I remember it slightly differently. You're right. That was the criteria. But what I said was, we don't need to be perfect. We don't need to pay money we're not making yet to have a perfect recording. We just need to be better than everybody else. That's all.
And you were.
And we were. And that's a testament to Mike. Although we did have the right equipment and we double-ended it. People still are amazed today that we're not in the same place when we record. Folks, we're not. I'm in California. Mike is in Northern Virginia. Sarah is at home in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. Kate is in Austin and Wendy is in San Antonio. And we're all on Zoom for this recording, which is actually exceptionally rare. I don't even know if I've ever recorded a podcast on Zoom. We always use Skype connected to Audio Hijack Pro. And this is, again, a shout out to Paul Figiani, our audio engineer, who makes us sound good even when we don't sound good. Thank you, Paul.
That story makes me think the fact that it's probably the first experience I've heard of someone personally being both fast to market and with quality. Right? Like, you were first off the blocks and also, you know, at the top of the game in that sphere when you first started.
I'll tell you why. One of the reasons why we got lucky in that regard is because the vast majority of podcasts do not have their own content.
Mm-hmm.
And so quality is, can be determined to some degree by the interviewer's ability to interview and preparation. But typically that's not going to be the case for a weekly podcast. For many people, it's not a money-making endeavor. But the quality is determined by the caliber of their guests and their preparation, how good they are. And, we get asked all the time. I get emails. I just wrote about this and things. I think I get emails all the time from people who say, I've got a guest for you. Some PR person flacking for somebody saying, we got a guest. I think he'd be great for your show. And I'm just like, it's embarrassing. You've got me on the equivalent of an auto dial because we don't have guests on our show. I think we've done it.
That's after they tell you how much they like our podcast.
Oh, they do. They like our podcast.
Exactly. Oh, we listen all the time. It's so good.
Yeah.
What made you decide in the beginning that you weren't going to have ads? Because so many, like 99% of podcasts are supported by ads.
We weren't planning on making money. That was
part of it. In the beginning, I'm not sure podcasts did have ads.
No, you're right. Back then they didn't.
Yeah, they didn't.
At some stage, they started to.
Yeah, but we decided, like 100 other things that have happened here, we decided we didn't like them. Mm-hmm. Not for us producing them or presenting them or connecting them. We just thought, that's not what we would want if we were a listener. We've done that 100 times. We just announced some things I think that if you've been a licensee of ours for 2 years and you've been getting things I think and you retire, if you ask us, we'll continue to allow you to get things I think even in retirement, even if you don't have a license. We'll call it a retirement package or something, or a farewell or something, because that's what we would want if we were loyal to an organization and then we didn't have an economic relationship. Things I think sort of does a little bit more than economics for a lot of people. And the same thing for if you lose a job. If you're a licensee and you lose your job, you're laid off, you're fired, doesn't matter. You lose your job and it comes time to renew your license. It's $200 a year, folks. It comes time to renew your license. Just send us a mail and we'll give it to you for free. Because that's what we would want if we had gotten fired or laid off or lost our job for some reason. We would want a company that's trying to help us in our career to support us during that time. And when you get hired back again, and now you can put the $200 annual expense, and we don't think it's very much. We like to joke that it's Tiffany advice at Walmart prices. Mm-hmm. But when you can afford us again, let us know and we'll bill you then. The reason we did that was because that's what we would want if we were on the other side of the equation. So
yeah, and we tried ads, we hated them.
We did, yeah, we did. People said you should do ads, and you know, gosh, you could be so great, and you've got a big audience, and so on. And the first year we did them, I think, Mike, we made what, $50,000 on ads? Yeah,
63,000.
Oh, yeah. But relatively speaking, at that point, it was trivial. I mean, it wasn't that big a deal.
Of course, for a long time, we went just the complete opposite, which is not only are we not going to do external ads, but we're not even going to talk about our internal products.
Right.
We don't want to bother people with the fact that we need to make money as an organization.
Right. Exactly.
But you need to support ourselves.
Yeah. And in fact, we continued that with our launch of executive tools, which we'll talk about in just a minute, starts in a couple of days on the 30th, I think, the first episode. Mm-hmm. Does the first episode drop on the 30th? No, it drops on the 28th. Drops on the 28th. Yeah.
Yeah. Monday, the 28th.
Yeah.
No, Wednesday, the 30th.
No, that's when our anniversary is. That doesn't mean we're going to delay our podcast until the 30th, is it?
Exec Tools goes out on Wednesdays.
Oh, that's right. I'd forgotten. Yes, we have three podcasts a week now, Monday, Wednesday,
and Thursday. Now you see how the soup is made.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
As long as one of us knows what's going on, we're all good.
But Mike and I talked about whether or not we would have ads and exec tools, and we decided we would not. Now, we will have, and I think you could arguably apply this term to what we do in our existing podcasts, we're not going to have ads. And of course, when we say ads, people assume it's external ads, and they discover they're really just internal reminders about our products and services, which fund the podcast, by the way. But we're not going to have ads. We're going to have PSAs, public service announcements, which are essentially about us. And we'll do our best to keep them reasonable and as much under the radar as possible. Because again, when I listen to podcasts, I'm shocked at how long the ads are. The better the podcast is, the bigger the audience, the more money they can make by selling more time up front when I have to listen to ads. Now, I understand the economics of it. There's no problem. I get it. But I don't have to listen if I don't want to. And it just reminds me of the inherent unsupportability in the long term of three-party economic systems. So.
Yeah. Well, I don't think we've ever thought of monetizing directly our podcast. That's never been in the back of our head.
No.
The point of the podcast is share the information we have freely with as many people in the world. And luckily, it helps people learn about managed tools, have a relationship with managed tools, figure out what kind of people we are and those that we employ, and look at our other products and services, right? But in terms of monetizing it directly, we've never done that. And most podcasts, that's what they're trying to do.
Yeah.
That's how they make their money.
Yeah. And that leads us to a good lesson, which we just happened to us in the last year. We're recording this obviously in 2021. And one of the things we're going to talk about is key lessons we have over the years. I think our first lesson is, what would we as a customer want? What would the experience be like if we were our own customers? And how would we want to get our management guidance? So if you're wondering how it is that we structure the podcast, we structure it the way we would want it. And the content in the podcast are the things that we would have wanted to know. I say this quite frequently, but if you haven't heard us say it before, I'll say it again. Mike and I did not know this stuff when we started our careers. And we discovered in the Army and Procter & Gamble and MCI and Mobile that neither did senior people. And it was annoying. And we didn't like the feeling of not knowing what we were doing and not being able to trust people above us to know what they were doing. And that management was all just personalities, since personalities are so widely divergent. And so what you're getting in our podcast, specific actionable stuff, that's because that's what we would have wanted. Not theory, not a book, not anecdotes and stories and leaving you to figure out what the key lesson and what the how to implement that, but rather do this today. As Churchill would say, action this day. That's what we would have wanted. Tell me what to do. Tell me how to solve this problem. Don't tell me the what or the why or, tell me the how. I've got a problem here. I need to fix it. Don't say things like be approachable. Don't say, you need to be equitable. You need to be open-minded. You need to see around corners and so on. I hated all that stuff. I was like, I have a real problem. And millions of people around the world do this job every day. And you're telling me nobody knows this stuff? Well, later we find out they did know this stuff. But the management sciences world has a bad marketing department. And so I had to actually start my own management consulting firm to learn what it was that it took to be good managers.
Yeah, I think that's important part of the guidance is it's not actions based upon some theory. It's based on results and observing what managers do in the real world and what kind of results they get. And if you're smart, like Mark is, you look at enough of them, you start to create a theory based upon success as observed, right? Which is a very different way of than saying, I think this is the world the way, this is the way the world should work. And I'm going to prescribe a bunch of behaviors based upon the way I think the world works. And diverges from reality.
Well, as people say to me all the time, well, Mark, I don't see it this way. I don't do it this way. I said, that's fine. It's okay. Keep doing it your way. You have your anecdote. I have a big mountain of data.
The data.
Right? I think I win, but you keep, the great thing about freedom and a great deal of the world is free today, thankfully, is that you get to do what you want. And life is really good about consequences. So another lesson that really happened a year ago was the pandemic. So in addition to focusing on customers and giving customers what we would have wanted, both in terms of how the product is presented, but also what the product is, both in Manager Tools and Career Tools and our other products as well, specific and actionable, we made a decision, Mike and I made a decision years ago, that we were going to be very conservatively managed, which is actually an annoyance for some in our audience because they believe we should take VC money and we should sell the company to somebody else who don't get the vision and we could grow massively. We could have a huge advertising budget and we could buy customers essentially. And if we had more customers, we would be more successful because we think we could keep them. But that is a recipe for ups and downs. And I can't remember who was it? Oh, it was Mike Markula, one of the original founders of Apple, or at least the original funder of Apple, a former Intel guy said, and I'm going to paraphrase here, you shouldn't start a company to get rich. you should start a company to deliver something you care about and to build an organization that will outlast you. And this cast, as much as any other we've ever done, is about building the organization to outlast us. That Mike and I, our mission is to make every manager in the world effective and every professional productive. And we know that won't happen in our lifetime. And so we intended to build an organization that would last. And the way you build an organization is hire the right people, present company included, and then put in place the systems and processes that will make it robust enough to withstand almost anything, like governmental lockdowns in response to a pandemic. And we're here today because we followed that guidance. We're not a big company, but we had $1 million in cash in the bank. I can promise you, if you're a small company, cash is king.
Yeah. And we thought $1 million was going to get us through anything. And
yeah. Well, we did. And it did. But at the same time, there was some pucker factor there in April and May of last year. And fortunately for us, because we hired well years before, the other three people on this cast, Kate and Sarah and Wendy, rallied together, and we turned all of our in-person products into virtual products and turned on a dime, basically. And by the way, if you ever thought about working at Manager Tools, you should be willing to turn on a dime if you have to. And you should be willing to go without sleep if there's a global pandemic and the economy shuts down.
Yeah. They don't happen often. I feel like
you
could spend a couple of nights working.
Yeah. Yeah. We're a humane place to work as well.
Yeah.
And we have a one-page employee manual. You work here. We trust you. Do what you think is best. Because if you don't trust somebody, you shouldn't hire them. So if we've hired you, we trust you. Make your decision and do what happened. Do what you need to do. And then we'll see what's what afterwards. And if the results are good, you'll get positive feedback. And if the results are amazing. Bad, you'll get negative feedback. Those principles
can get you through a pandemic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They can.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
And it was the best 9 people to be working with in a pandemic. We were lucky in that having the hiring bar this high means you can get through anything.
Yeah. It wasn't luck.
Yeah.
Yeah,
It looks lucky from the outside, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
It
was same great. Principles apply to management, right? You do a few simple things like mm-hmm. Have relationships mm-hmm. with your people, give them performance feedback, make them better, coach them, delegate work down. Hey, things work out pretty well.
And in another significant disruption, we started Manager Tools in 2005, in June of 2005, and then in late 2007 through 2008, we had the Great Recession, and that was the origin of our second cast, which is Career Tools. Now, many of you have forgotten this, but in the very beginning, I was getting so many questions from people about careers that the way Manager Tools was set up, we would do 3 management podcasts a month, and then we would do a career cast. We had one a month every month. And in 2008, I think, wasn't it, Wendy? It was mm-hmm. in 2008. We realized that the economic struggle of the Great Recession would cause us to have to expand the amount of career tools casts were. So there was a period of time there for a little bit where I was writing 2 casts a week. And then luckily, Wendy, we had Wendy on board. And I said to Wendy, okay, who, by the way, was hired because she was the smartest person I'd ever read online about careers. Because believe me, the people who are writing about careers online, there's an old saying about the internet. On the internet, nobody knows your dog. The worst advice in the world comes from markets where there is a low barrier to entry. Mm-hmm. And I hired Wendy. And then during 2008, I said, okay, you're going to start writing Career Tools podcasts because I can't do both of them. And she said, no, I'm not. And she should have known better, of course.
Wise advice, say no to your boss a lot.
Yes, exactly.
Not. Worst advice in the world.
Yeah. But as I recall, Wendy, you wrote them, but I recorded them.
Yeah, for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I think you said, you're going to record them. And I went, no, I'm not.
No, I'm not. Yeah, you are. That's how good the delegation model works, folks. People will say,
I'm a terrible employee, to be fair. And Mark does a great job of managing me, and probably nobody else in the world would want to.
Yeah, yeah. Thinking about other highlights, what other highlights stand out in the last 16 years?
First conference. Tell that story.
The first conference?
Yeah.
Oh, so.
Oh, my Lord, yeah.
Mike.
Oh, my Lord, I don't mean, oh, my windy Lord.
Yeah. Yeah. We had been doing podcasts for a couple of years. I think things were going well. The audience was growing quite successfully. We were amazed at where we were ranked on iTunes. At one point, we were the number one business podcast on iTunes. When the market was iTunes and nothing else, we won the Podcast of the Year award in the business category so many times. They've now named the category after us because of the love our community had, because it was community-based voting for the Podcast of the Year award. But Mike one day said, hey, we need to make money, because we already always knew we needed to come up with a revenue model. And I said, okay, we'll do a conference, you know, a two-day conference. It'll be a management conference. And he said, you can do that? And I said,
I remember exactly where I was.
Sure.
Table on Marshall Pond Road.
I don't know if you know this or not, Mike, but you were a client of mine and I used to do this. And I said, and here's the agenda. And I wrote it out on a piece of paper. Two-day agenda. Here it is. That's about it. And so we announced that we were going to have a conference and had no idea, it was at Dulles Airport, how good it would turn out.
It was awesome. 2 days, right? Two days.
We were expecting 20, 30, 40 people, and we had over 100 that first time.
Yeah. Those of you who've been to a conference know we do introductions at the beginning. this particular conference, I think the introductions were, what, like 3 hours?
3 hours. It was this love-in thing. It was, we had pieces of paper all over. It was Old Home Week people coming together and saying, oh my gosh, you listen, and oh my gosh, I can't believe this. And we were 2 or 3 or 4 hours behind by the time to finish the first day. And we got back into our hotel room. In fact, Kate was there helping. And I said, I got this. I can do this. And I caught us up the next day, the 2 days. And that was our first conference. And then we had one in San Antonio, as I recall, our second conference.
The hottest conference of all time.
Yeah. It was a good hotel, a good room, but boy, it was
the room hot. Was cool. The room was very cool, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was great. It's just that we couldn't, it was just so hot in the afternoon.
Yeah, couldn't go outside. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we went to, as I recall, Amsterdam, our first international conference, and that's where we met Wendy, as I recall.
Yeah. And we went to Amsterdam and London, right?
No,
yes, you came to London afterwards, not for a conference,
not
but
yet.
Afterwards to do a meetup. Yeah.
Yeah.
In a pizza restaurant. In a basement.
That was the first example I'd ever seen in real life of British Reserve. Because they were still hungry, but wouldn't say anything.
Yeah.
And Wendy was like, we need more pizza.
Yeah. And Wendy, if I recall correctly, you have shared with us an email you sent to a friend of yours after you attended the Amsterdam conference that I presented from 8 to 5 or whatever. And then I opened it up for questions like we do, open Q&A. And I didn't finish until midnight. And it was a management conference. I would say that was not as much about our content as it was about how hungry people were. One of my favorite books is called Come Thirsty, meaning the spigot is on. There's a lot here. Come Thirsty, because we're going to do that. It wasn't written about us. It's a Christian book, but they were thirsty. They just kept asking questions and asking questions. And finally, one of y'all said, hey, you have to do this again tomorrow.
And we need to get you back.
It was tired. Yeah.
Yeah. Those original Q&A sessions, we used to let them go as long as we wanted. And it was hours and hours.
And another bit of history, we had cocktail parties.
They were
2 day events. And at the end of the first day, we had cocktail parties, so that people could meet and chat and so on and start forming a community. And we had to stop them because there was so much noise in the room and people were standing in line to ask me questions and I had to raise my voice. And I was losing my voice at the end of the first day and couldn't go. It was very, very hard for me to finish the second day. So we got rid of the cocktail hours.
Standing in that room, in the cocktail room, just so we were all just so tired and just everybody trying to like, yes, yes, we're so excited to be here.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
Not as excited as we were that you were there. I remember.
Another highlight was Wall Street Journal.
Oh, yeah. Mm.
That was a big thing. I remember going down to the desk of the hotel in San Antonio that we were at. And there at the front desk, we had been told that the Wall Street Journal would have the article in it. And there it was on the counter at the checkout desk at the hotel. I opened it up and I was like, wow. And I'll never forget Dahlia, the reporter, emailing us and say, hey, we want to do a feature for you for the Wall Street Journal. And I said, okay, happy to do it. And so we got interviewed. Mike and I got interviewed. And then a week or two before the article came out, somebody wrote and said, my manager says he wants art for this, which is a term meaning they want to take a picture.
Art. Nobody's ever used that term right. associated with a picture of me. That's
for sure. And what was funny was they said, we want a picture of you podcasting. I said, well, that won't work. And I explained again about double ending, and it would just be boring. I'd just be, you know, my mouth would be open and there'd be a microphone and Mike would be somewhere else and doing it. And we really didn't want to do it together. And he says, well, okay, where are you? And I said, well, I'm in Pebble Beach in California. And as it happens, Mike is flying out and we're going to be together for a week. So maybe we can take a picture somewhere outside. And they thought that would be okay. So I called my friend David Hoyk, who's an executive at Pebble Beach, and he referred me to somebody who could set something like that up for us. And I talked to them and I said, hey, how about a picture in front of the 18th Green at Pebble Beach? And I was informed, and of course, David knew this, but wanted somebody else to tell me this, that the views, the view sheds, the iconic views that are Pebble Beach are owned by Pebble Beach, and you cannot use them for a commercial purpose without the express written consent of Pebble Beach. And so I was kind of flabbergasted, but I respected it. And then I said, well, she says, maybe there's somewhere else we could do it. And I didn't want to do it in a hotel ballroom. And I said, well, what about the Tap Room, which is the most famous 19th hole in golf and one of my favorite restaurants in the world? And she said, sure, that's fine. And so if you'd ever told me, I mean, there's an old saying about being in the Wall Street Journal. There are two ways to get into the Wall Street Journal, and only one of them is good. And if I'd ever been in the Wall Street Journal, I'd wanted it to be good. But you never convinced me in a million years that my picture with my business partner, Mike, would be in the Wall Street Journal in the tap room.
It was being the Wall Street Journal, then having a tap room burger afterwards.
Yes.
That is heaven.
It was pretty great.
Pretty good day.
Yeah.
Pretty good day.
So should we make some announcements? I've been going on for 40 minutes now. Can we make some announcements about what's happening at the
We have announcements.
Would someone else like to talk?
We have some more highlights coming up.
Right? Yeah.
We talked about past highlights, but we've got more coming up. We've got the changes to the license, right? On June 30th.
Yep.
Wendy's probably the best person to speak to that, given that I didn't know when, you know, the date was. I'd love to.
On June 30th, we are making permanent the changes that we made for the pandemic. So we are including a bunch of other products with your license. So you will have access to the interviewing series, resume workbook, first job fundamentals, and the video feedback series forever, or at least for as long as you have a license, including all the show notes that go with that. And you as licensees will have exclusive access to executive tools. Doesn't exist yet, but I have heard the first one and it's amazing. And I have also seen the outlines for the first 12 and they're also amazing. They are what you need to know before you become an executive so that when you're one, you are ready to be one and you know the change in mindset that you have to make in order to be successful. Mark was dictating to me last week and I was just like, oh, this is gold.
I know the moments when your hairs
stand up on your wrists. It was one of those moments. So I promise you it's going to be amazing. So licensees will have access to that. You get a super duper personalized RSS feed just for you with your exec tools podcasts on it. And I'm sure there's more, but that I'm forgetting.
As I like to say about executive tools, do you think they're going to teach you how to be an executive when they promote you to become one? Hell no, they're not. And that's what people learn when they become managers. They didn't teach me anything. I have to figure it out on my own.
They didn't teach how to be a manager.
But when you become an executive, you no longer have the learning curve, the long, slow learning curve that so many managers have. It's expected immediately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know what you're doing.
That, did they teach you to be a professional? No, they taught you to be a finance person or a Java coder or whatever. Nobody ever teaches that stuff that's not skill-based.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think people's perception of what executives do are sometimes wrong, right? So
might be different.
Before you get the job, you might want to figure out what you're going to have to do and whether you're willing to do it.
And I just wanted to make sure that we're all on the same page.
Manager Real-time tools, discovery here.
Manager tools comes out on Monday. Executive tools comes out on Wednesday. Career tools comes out on Thursday.
Yes.
So we have executive tools is going to be every other week.
Yes. Not every week. Yeah.
Good. Good to know. And we're going to have three, and you can only get access to executive tools as part of your personal recurring license.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
So exciting.
And talking of same page, we're not changing the price. It's $200 now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And if you're already a licensee or you buy it now, when you hear this, your access is the benefits that you get will be changed automatically on the 30th. Mike and his team are doing some magic that I don't understand. And so you can buy it now for $200 or you can buy it the day after for $200. It's the same price, but you will get all of those extra benefits and a whole bunch more because we have a phase two of the license upgrade, which is still in planning, but will come.
I think the plan would be, though, that it's going to come this year in 2021. Yes, because we have more products slated to come out in 2021 and 2022, like Manager Tools Disk product.
Yay.
That's coming as well.
So excited about that.
Another thing that's happening around our Sweet 16 is, some of you know, part of the reason all of us are on this podcast is because very quietly, in the dark of night, without without a farewell, which was planned, by the way, you won't hear Mike and I's voices anymore on Manager Tools. After 16 years, we figured you've had enough of us, and we made the transition to two people who are running the two biggest businesses we have at Manager Tools, which are clients and public conferences, and that's Sarah and Kate, and they are now the voice of Manager Tools. I told them that they should just start writing the cast too, and they said no. They're gonna let me keep doing that for a little while.
And both of them weren't stupid enough to say no. I'm not.
Yes, that's right.
Let us at it.
Yeah. Well, they not only said yes. I think secretly they were thinking, "What took you so long?"
Because
no one said that out loud.
No, exactly. You do.
Right. You're right. That is true. No truer words were ever spoken.
Classic Sarah.
And in addition to that, I'm coming off the road. We've been talking about it for years. Yeah. In fact, I think it's been 4 years ago that I wrote the most responded to things I think in history. Things has been going on for 12 years now, I think. Maybe even we're on our 13th year. And I wrote a long issue called a valedictory to traveling, to being on the road, about my experiences being on the road and the millions of miles in the air I had and so on. And it only took us 4 years to make that transition. Mm-hmm. Partially because now we have three full-time presenters, Kate and Sarah and Andrew Spillman now as well.
It's funny, Mark, that you say 4 years. I had a memory pop up on social media. Because it does that now. It reminds you of things from your past, which
you want to forget.
Yeah. You know, ooh, good times.
Posted that picture.
Just me.
Luckily, all the pictures I post are of dogs. So it's cool.
Yeah.
And there was a status post that said, Mark's coming off the road. It's the end of an era. And it's from 6 years ago.
Six years ago.
6 years ago, you said to me something like, you know, I think I'm going to come off the road. I'm not going to travel. And that was right before I started working here.
Yeah.
And then
Well,
it only took me 6 years to get you off the road.
What is that line from The Godfather? You think they're out, and then they pull you right back.
Right? And as if to prove everything you've ever said, that your calendar represents your priorities, I was looking at your calendar for a couple of months from now, and it is empty compared with, you know, days when you traveled where it would be full from
full.
5 a.m. until midnight, like it is today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. But in 6 weeks' time, it's empty.
Yeah.
And so the calendar proves you are actually this time coming off the road.
Wendy, you do realize that there are hundreds of thousands of people listen to this podcast, and I'm now going to be deluged with emails.
Right.
To talk on the
so
phone.
Much time to answer emails. Comparatively, it's not from 5 a.m. till midnight now. Like
that's
it's
true.
Not empty, empty, but comparatively and as if to prove that point, there is no travel on. So.
Yeah, listen, everybody, you can't delusion with emails because we specifically said, we'll record and we need you to keep writing until all the words are gone from your head.
Yes.
To which
a lot
Mark,
of words in there.
Yeah. To which Mark promptly responded, okay, I'm going to write another book.
Yeah.
And, you know, so.
Yeah. That's recurring. That's a recurring theme throughout the history of our podcast. I kept on asking Mark, "Do you have any more? Are you going to run out in the next 2 months?" It's
like, yeah, we just had a discussion about another conference, right? A professional tools conference.
Yeah,
about the basics of being a professional, running meetings, and all the things that are along that go along with managing and being a professional, but aren't the Trinity.
They don't teach
or
you
DISC. Yeah,
it's like the. Well, and it's not as pertinent anymore, but I always think of it as the same way that kids graduate high school not knowing how to write a check.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, we don't write
life
as many
skills,
checks. Right. And, yeah. Yeah. Or
personal
you know,
finance,
do taxes
generally.
Or something.
Your taxes.
Yeah. Yeah. Anything like that, that you, if you graduate high school and you don't know how to do that stuff, having to learn it when you need it is much more stressful. And it's, you know, stuff like this, learning it before you get there. Your head and shoulders above everybody else because nobody knows.
Yep. And nobody's teaching it. There's no evidence that anybody's teaching this stuff other than us, which seems a little weird to me. But we're just going to keep doing what we're doing. We've been doing it for 16 years. We'll be doing it 16 more years from now and 16 more years after that because our mission is every manager effective, every professional productive. And that's not going to be achieved in my lifetime. And so therefore we have to build an organization that will last until that happens many, many years from now.
Yes, we do.
We are very lucky. Wendy, you said we were lucky earlier, but we do feel very lucky to be doing this. I feel very lucky to have as many great colleagues as I do. And I can promise you folks, we think about you every day and we want to make your lives more effective, healthier, wealthier, more successful, more spiritually rewarding. We want you to have your directs come up to you and say, you're the best manager I ever had. If that happens to you, you'll never forget it. And by the way, please don't send us an email saying that we're the ones that Manager Tools did it. Because as we tell everybody when they send us that note, nope, credit always goes to the one in the ring. A lot of folks listen. And some folks implement it. And if you're implementing our stuff, we say thank you for trusting us. This is a labor of love. And we intended to keep doing it until they drag us off to jail. Anything else?
No, I think that was a great way to end. This is the best job in the world. And we're incredibly lucky. And every one of those emails that we get that says, you changed my life, or even you just made my Monday better, means the world to us, and we'll continue doing so for the next
That's why
as long millennium. As I can
millennium.
Have the energy.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks for one. I love each and every one of you. And for those of you who listened this far, thanks for being there for us because just like any relationship, it's a two-way street and we do what we do because of who you are and what you want to become. It's an incredible honor to be a part of that because we know how important it is to you and trust doesn't come easily, folks. So,
yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
Okay.
Thanks, guys. Bye, everyone.
Thanks, everyone. We'll see you next week. Have a great one.